Wallace, why is the new CD titled No Room for Argument?
It's a message to let people know what the thoughts are behind the notes that I'm playing. That's what it's basically about. And the message is that we're all the same people, that we all created the same. We all have blood and nerve endings in our brain. And when the blueprint was made for human beings, there weren't hierarchies or people to oppress or, you know, be better than anybody. And only person that's better than us is the one that created us. And there's no room for argument for that. That's what it's about.
Okay, on the tune Homage and Acknowledgement, do you seek to combine musical elements of Coltrane's A Love Supreme and, of course, Miles's Filet de Kilimanjaro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, plus with some updated stuff of my own. That's what we did. And we put it together with African chants and rhythms, because that's the beginning and the lifeblood of this music.
Well, it seems to me that you think that African chants and rhythms are the ground or the grounding of music.
Right, I do. For this music anyway. This music known as jazz.
What's your favorite number of the whole CD, if you have one?
Oh, I don't, because it's all one thing, you know, for me. It's one whole thing, so I don't have a favorite. But if I would say one thing that represents everything, well, they all represent the same, but Homage and Acknowledgement is represents the beginning of my views of music. It's Phyllis D and Love Supreme, which I think are two of the greatest records ever made. And notice I said two of the greatest,
mm-hmm.
because there could be some other great records as well, and they are. But they are definitely two of the greatest, and they are my favorite. And to me, it seemed to sum up everything that had happened from the beginning of this music and everything that should have happened after they recorded it. But it was so ahead of its time in every aspect. Like in Miles' Phyllis D. Kilimanjaro, they're swinging.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing innovative, but yet they're not playing a 4-4 walking bass line.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing polychords and odd rhythms with a passion that's very feverish. And John Coltrane's record meet them with that passion. But theirs is, it goes over into the spiritual, and they're doing the same sort of thing, you know? So
mm-hmm.
you get those elements, and maybe if music had continued that way totally, we never know where we'll be, not knocking where it went, because it had to go there too. So maybe now it's time to bring those elements back out and look at the stuff that people missed in those records. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of people were influenced by those records all the way up to this current, even the pop music. But there were definitely aspects of those records that were very complicated that were ignored, probably now to be picked up at this later date.
What's your most vivid memory of working with Tony Williams? I know he was a tremendous influence on you. When we spoke last, you talked about him at length and how he helped you to play outside the box, so to speak.
Yeah. My lasting impression of Tony Williams was, here's a man who was a passionate human being and a virtuosic artist. He could do anything, and he could play things on his instrument that would amaze you every time you'd see him. And the thing that was even more amazing than his virtuosity was his creativity.
And what was so exciting about his creativity from your point of view?
Well, his creativity was the fuel that made that his virtuosity worked off of. He could do things that were visually amazing, but his way of putting things together made it more than musically satisfying. It became innovative. it was in the same lineage of Charlie Parker or John Coltrane and his creativity and his virtuosity. Or even some classical musicians, you know, like Horowitz or Rubinstein, because I see all of them sort of the same. Charlie Parker, Rubinstein, Paganini, Coltrane, Tony Williams. They're kind of, you know, there's probably some other cultures that have the same type of virtuosity that I'm not aware of even, you know, like Ravi Shankar.
Speak of Ravi Shankar and the Indian music scene, are you aware of the Miles Davis recording of Joe Zawinul's Orange Lady?
Of course.
That's a very deeply moving recording. I don't think that Miles Davis ever toured India, but I've listened to a lot of Indian music in my time, and Miles seems to really play the spirit of Indian music in that tune.
Well, you know, I was very influenced by that record and by that composition, and more the composition, Miles's approach, because Joe's composition is a beautiful composition. But what Miles seemed to have on there, which is what I try to represent, is every aspect or every culture of music. He has the tablas and the sitar, and that represents Indian music. He has African percussion and Latin American percussion. He has the African-American drum set. So, I mean, everything is sort of represented, you know what I mean? The chords that they're playing are poly harmonies that are from Europe, some of them, and some from Africa. And they're playing, you know, he seemed to have every culture represented in that music. And that's what I wanted to do. Only I still wanted to come more from the straight-ahead jazz point of view that he had also pioneered than from the fusion jazz element that he was working with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My framework was still a looser, more innovative, rhythmic background that Tony had pioneered with Miles. That was going to be my one of the differences that I was going to use in his influence of that approach. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What was the most important thing you learned from Miles Davis, musically or otherwise?
Well, I don't know if there's one thing that's the most important, but I just love the fact that whatever obstacle he was dealt with, he kept trying to go forward, you know, and his music always had elements of innovation in them, all the way up through his death. And his trumpet playing, of course, what moved me the most was that it was reflective of human emotion, and I liked that. It was moody, it was happy, it was romantic, it was bright, it was dark, you know, and he reflected that. Lester Young also had that in his playing. Charlie Parker had that in his playing as well. You know, those are the guys that I really like.
On the tune Metropolis, it sounds a lot like Miles' Nefertiti. Was that record the inspiration for the number?
Yeah, that's the whole inspiration for this whole record was a fusing of Nefertiti, Love Supreme, Phyllis D. Kilimanjaro, Herbie's and Wandishi record, band, Tony Williams' Lifetime. I was trying to put all those elements as one thing. You know, and the thing, and it's like a modern bitch's brew. So only thing is, each one of those landmark records might have neglected some of the prior innovations. Not by choice, maybe they just was so caught up in what they were doing, except in Wandishi. And Herbie's band seemed to have gotten the best of Miles, what he had done with Miles, and what Miles was doing now, and John Coltrane, and Tony. So that was a very good model. So yeah, Metropolis is definitely reflective of that sound because it's all part of what I'm trying to do.
One of the early fusion bands that we love, Herbie's M1 Dishy group, Tony's Lifetime, and of course, early weather report, vessels, in your opinion, for the most sophisticated fusion of jazz, rock, and other musical elements?
Well, to me, at that point, I don't know if you called it fusion. It seemed like there was a lot of creative things happening at that moment, and maybe they didn't want to succumb to rock and roll, but they were being, it was, sometimes when you resist something, the most creative aspects come out, and that seemed to seem what was going on at that moment. But I didn't stop there. There's also elements of my music that I had learned from Miles's later music, you know, from the 80s and 90s, because that's when I knew Miles. That's when I started hanging with him, although I was probably more influenced by the music he made prior to that. But I used that, and I used modern keyboard that was going on in popular music, because the keyboards they were using in their day were the modern keyboards. But I still let the piano be the focal point of the keyboard sound. So it's not like I was just going for trying to recreate or getting, the early band. I was true to my inspiration. That's what I was. And I didn't worry about where it came, what people would say.
The keyboard work in Virtual Chocolate Cherry definitely recalls Herbie in the 1970s. Was that your intention?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
My intention was to be inspired by Herbie, period. You see?
Yeah.
That's it. So it wasn't a period time. It was him, period. Because what he offers music, even right now, is just incredible. So if I had asked Herbie to play on it, maybe he would have made those choices. Jerry being such a person influenced by Herbie, knowing his contribution, she took it and put it in through her thing, and that's what came out. I'm really insisting that it's not from a period. It's more from an inspiration.
How has your wife and Anton contributed to your band and your growth as a musician?
Well, she's contributed to my growth as a musician ever since I've known her since 1975. And me and her practiced together all the time. And we shared the same love of music and turned each other on to certain things, to everything, you know. So she was very instrumental with every step of my growth as an artist. That's what we're talking about, 25 years. She brings with her artistry and everything that I know she can do. And the reason why I asked her to be in the band is because the element that Herbie brought from Nwandishi, I know she loves so much, even though she has filtered it through her own way of looking at it. She brings that element to my band. So that's what I tried to do. Lenny brought the Tony Williams Lifetime element to the band, because that's where he was coming from. Buster brings the Nwandishi and Ron Carter element to the band, and I of course, bring my protégeship from Miles Davis to my band, and my saxophone players reflect the saxophone lineage I like, which is through Charlie Parker, John Coltrane, and Wayne Shorter, and they all bring their own creative individuality to how they hear that approach put together.
What to you personally is the most frustrating thing today about being a musician in a climate which oftentimes wants people to conform to one way or another of playing or performing?
Well, that's probably the thing, is there's probably an unfairness to how the people who control the business of music try to portray the people who make the music, and they seem to have an agenda that is based on where they put their money or their dollars, and they give this to the consumer, or let's not say consumer, let's say the fans of the music. And since they control what the fans read or see, it doesn't give the creative artist a chance to be heard like it probably was 20 or 30 years ago, when their business machine wasn't as efficient as it is now. So we still had a chance to choose who we like. That's a frustrating thing, because if they decide that they're not going to get behind somebody or they don't want to push somebody, it seems that they will spend dollars on pushing who they like and other dollars to knock the other people who stand to threaten what they want. And that's frustrating for an artist. And any artist on the scene today will tell you, even the ones that benefit, that this that these things exist, our strength is how we can get around it and still make creative music and fulfill our spiritual, you know, life, I guess.
You think your association with Stretch Records has helped you in that regard?
Well, I don't know. This is my first record for Stretch, and it's less than a year, but I have total respect for Chick Corea. So, in that regard, as an artist, I hope it does. If he can pull the same as a record company head as he does as an artist, then we'll be in good shape. And I know he has every intention to making his label succeed. So I hope it works out. If it doesn't work out, there won't be any reflection from him as an artist, I'm sure. That just probably one more stepping stone in this music business. But we're all optimistic, you know, and it all depends on the fans and the lovers of this music. You know, I think ultimately all success, all politics can be overridden by the support, by very simple things, support.
I'm wondering on this new CD, the tune New Beings, what does the title of that tune refer to?
The new beings are us. We're the same beings, but new beings is once we realize that we are the same people. Because, you know, I mean, in this last 100 years, we've conquered, overcome, supposedly, but we don't see the effects of caste system and racial stereotypes and prejudices and politics that we're talking about. Not just in everyday life, in every aspect of life. And if we can realize that we weren't created for that, we're all created the same. No one's better than anybody else. Once we all understand that, then we have evolved to new beings. You know, this is what I feel when I'm playing my trumpet. These are the notes or the reasonings or the notes behind the notes, you know, which each polychord or how I affect the chords. There are emotions and there are reasons that make the music more than just a music. It's an art, you know, for me. Now, to someone else's, it could be very well just music, and that's fine with however you take it. I think I put things in the liner notes to let people know how I feel about life and music.
Do some of the, I sense, spiritual inspirations here come from people like Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr., people that you sampled on the new CD?
And Herbie, and Miles, and Coltrane. Yeah. Like, for one thing, there's a quote where Herbie says he thinks that music should lift you up and take you someplace, give you a spiritual feeling, or, you know, take you away from the everyday trauma. That's what I believe in music as well. So instead of me rephrasing it, I put his quote right there. It was perfect. And I got a lot of those things that sum up everything I believed about life and my art and people in general in my liner notes. It's all good. It's not a preaching thing. It's just, you know, fun.
What was the most difficult tune to produce in the new CD, from your opinion?
The most difficult tune to produce? I'm not sure. I think they all had their degree of difficulty, but they all had the musicians involved really came through, you know, and they were there and they wanted to see it through because they all kind of share the same vision. And it's going to be exciting what the next record is going to be, because now this is out of my system. The next will be a development of it, and then it's interesting to see how the guys who participated, how it affects their music. You know, it's like we all opened that door and said, well, we knew where it was all along, and these people were trying to stop us, but now no one's here to stop us. Let's do it.
That's a really good attitude to take.
I only wish Tony Williams was still alive to have participated on this, because this is some of the things that I so inspired by him, and I wish we could have. We talked about this like a year before he died anyway, but wow.
did working in Art Blakey's outfit prepare you for a career in music?
Well, it didn't prepare me for a career in music because he's one of the reasons why I wanted to play. So while I played with his band, that preparation led me to play with him, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
But what Art Blakey did reinforce was, again, that spiritual element or aspect of the music and the commitment to go on the bandstand and play with all you got all the time, because tomorrow isn't promised, and the people come to see you. What do they come to see you for? And also, the Creator gave you this gift, so you don't mess it up. You know, that's a sin to mess it up. And that's what Buhana was all about, you know, and he got up there, and he was the greatest drummer in the world because he utilized that. He utilized that aspect more than he did rudiments.
Yeah.
That was his rudiment.